We're a week into the federal campaign, and I don't mean to alarm you, but this election might just turn out to be about policy.
Nice to see you.
Hey, what's your name?
I'm Vicky Dominella.
Hi, Vicky. How are you?
What's
your
name?
Bill.
Oh, Bill.
You feel like the underdog?
Oh, of course we are. I mean, I don't think that status is contested.
Yeah.
Sure, we've had campaign mascots gyrating on posters and the odd candidate faux pas, but the early focus has stayed firmly on income tax, superannuation and climate policy. Maybe it's a reflection of the candidates, or voters growing tired of pollies bickering about personality. But for the first time in a long time, it's ideas that are getting all the oxygen. And with ideas coming to dominate our political discourse, it might just come down to who can sell them to voters, outside Scott Morrison's famous Canberra bubble. This is Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire. Later in this episode, I'll chat to Chief Political Correspondent David Crowe and Deputy Federal Bureau Chief Stephanie Peatling. But first, joining me from the top end, Shane Wright, our Senior Economics Correspondent, has been on the campaign trail with Opposition Leader Bill Shorten. When I talked to him on Thursday morning, Shane was in Darwin. Then we'll skip right down to the bottom of the country to catch up with Michael Koziol, who is with Scott Morrison in Launceston. Shane, thanks for joining me.
Good morning from crocodile shark-infested Darwin.
Where have you been in the 7 days since you got on the Bill bus in Canberra the day Scott Morrison called the election?
Well, we spent the first 3 days in and around Sydney, including a trip to the Easter show, a trip up to some sparkling netball courts at Woi Woi before heading down into Melbourne, then a flight across the continent that included about a 3-4 hour stop in Adelaide, about 18 hours in Perth, then a long haul up here to Darwin, and this evening we are heading back down to Melbourne.
You've done more than your fair share of these campaign trips. In fact, you and I did one of them together in 2004.
I'm officially the bus captain,
right,
as the journalist bus captain this time because of... Surprisingly, journalists have got younger, and I have clearly not aged.
It's shocking, isn't it?
Yeah.
What is your impression after one week with Bill Shorten on how he's travelling?
Well, it's interesting because I have not seen an opposition leader this comfortable and unqualmed, maybe the term to describe him. He is very comfortable. There is a real quiet confidence inside the ALP. Especially like there are senior members of the party travelling around with him, and he is not overly worried at this stage. He's not. We've actually just seen him in his most fired up press conference here in Darwin, sort of pushing back on the issue of climate change. But apart that has been about the first sign of that he may be feeling any pressure. He's clearly enjoying the trail, and clearly in interested and involved in announcing the policies that they are, particularly around cancer. And so he's engaging with a lot of people, and he clearly lives off that sort of aspect of politics.
I think that's really interesting, Shane, because from the other end of the country where we're watching the policy debate unfold, it actually looks like Bill Shorten's had a rough couple of days.
He has, after the superannuation issue.
I thought I was being asked about have we got any unannounced changes to superannuation, and we've already made the announcements of the changes we're going to make. You're right, I was answering a question which I thought I'd been asked, and I accept that it was a different question asked.
He was caught out yesterday, as you know, making a commitment not to put increased taxes on superannuation, but has $34 billion.
He misheard a question, and then he got into a fight with a particularly feisty journalist.
So he misheard that question, did he?
Yeah.
And answered what he thought was something else.
Yeah, and he cleaned that up the following day. But just like, for instance, we're in Perth, and in Perth, the ALP is now confident that they're going to pick up a seat like Stirling. Now, that was a seat with a 6% margin, where held by former Justice Minister Michael Keenan, but who's retiring at this election. Now, that is, and this is part of the election issue, that there are big changes going on in the separate states and within states. And WA is a real outlier, given what's going on over there. The fact that yesterday, or sorry, Wednesday was the first time he'd actually got into an ALP seat, which was Cowan. All the other seats he's been in have been Liberal marginal seats. They do hold the two seats here in the NT, but the trip up here is specifically about Indigenous health. So you, if you're going to talk about Indigenous health, you're going to end up in either Northern WA, the NT, or Northern Queensland. So it makes sense. But that's, I always find the best way to see how a campaign is going is to see where MPs, Prime Minister or the opposition leader are going. And that speaks volumes more than miles and miles of print words sometimes.
So with the caveat for our listeners that this, the environment you're in is heavily controlled. I mean, the Labor Party have been preparing for this trip for literally years and they would be tightly stage managing things. However, what sort of reaction is Bill Shorten getting when he does come in contact with real live voters?
Yeah, like the best example of that was in Adelaide, where they stopped at a shopping market to talk to do a street walk, and he was very well received. There is interest in, say, what Labor is talking about, cancer, for instance. The debate, say, over negative gearing or franking credits, it came up once. So, and the government's tax cuts haven't surfaced at all. So that's the sort of conversations that he's having. Like the NT, it is specific to Indigenous health, so that's, you'd expect people wanting to talk to him about that. And he was at the Darwin Ski Club last night, where he was talking to a group of health professionals, young health professionals who work in remote NT communities, and that's what they wanted to talk about. So that's the sort of thing. So the big ticket items that you and I focus on around, say, tax cuts or around climate change, as always, once you get lower down into these things, it is bread and butter issues that always come to the fore, and that's why that policy around cancer has got a lot of people engaged.
Right. Let's talk about tax cuts for a minute, because you had an exclusive on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age on Thursday saying that the Labor Party had decided not to match that second phase of the Coalition's proposed tax cuts for income earners between $90,000 and $120,000 a year, and instead spend that money on delivering bigger surpluses. What would have driven that decision? What would have Bill Shorten and Chris Bowen have been weighing up in the debate, the political debate, when they decided to not go for the hip pocket but go for the economic angle?
Yeah, it has been a real debate within the party about where to go. But it seems that the conclusion they've come to is that the public doesn't actually believe the 22-23 tax cuts or the 24-25 tax cuts, that they are so far off for most people that there's been a natural discount to something that's going to happen into the future. So they've worked through that and said, right, we can, if we build up the surplus, and remember, this is the opposition has got a lot of tax policy out there and they are going to raise extra revenue. You pummel that into a better surplus, and then you can, if you're thinking longer term, you can get to the next election offering a substantial tax cut into that space, which is where, if you follow the government's plan, you were going to be anyway, and go from there.
Oh, I see. So maybe this is a two-election strategy.
Well, the government's strategy is also a two-election strategy, remember, because that next round of tax cuts is beyond the next election. So that's the calculation.
Yeah, but they feel they have to promise it now to win this election.
Well, that's right. And that's like, we are in a crazy world where we're debating the merits of tax cuts 5 years into the future off a package that is a reformed package of tax cuts that were promised in 2018. So you can forgive voters for saying, oh, hold on, you're joking me, aren't you? Mm. Like, let's focus about the next 12 months, that'd be nice. Can you give me wage relief or give me tax relief more immediately? In fact, if the government, would have to be thinking, do we pull forward those 22, 23 tax cuts? Because they'd be getting the same sort of feedback.
Right.
Do we think, well, do we, and that, but they just don't have the money to do that. And then you get to the 24, 25 tax cuts, and they are pricey at $98 billion. And you can see the debate now that's going on. Well, most of that flows to people who are earning, they're in the top 10% of wage earners in the country. That it is a debate for them to have as well.
Shane, a lot of people have been saying that because these two leaders, neither of them have this kind of groundswell of people who are obsessed with their charisma and, you know, are donning T-shirts and marching around. That's why we're actually able to have an election campaign that's really focused on the policy. Do you think that, you know, just observing how the campaign's unfolding from where you are, do you think this campaign's more about policy than previous ones have been?
Yep, definitely, definitely. The government, you can see, wants to turn it a bit on Bill Shorten because they know he's not popular. In fact, Shorten will admit privately he knows he's not the most popular guy out there. So that's why.
Strange feeling, wouldn't it?
It would be a strange feeling. But then Scott Morrison is not, they're not putting up statues in every street park yet either for Scott Morrison, because he is still literally, he is still an unknown for so many people. Despite what he's trying to say, most people don't know who Scott Morrison is. So there is that element. I think the interesting aspect will be the public, the town hall debate slated for Perth on the 29th or 28th, 29th of April, how they play out the personality side of things, because you can't avoid that charismal / personality discussion when you've got two candidates standing next to each other. But it'll come down to, say, the persuasiveness of their arguments. And then you also have to trade off. You can't get too aggressive, otherwise you come off as a gruff old white guy having a go at each other, two grumpy old men. That's not what you really want either. So that's actually a really interesting aspect of what we're going to see.
Well, Shane, enjoy the rest of your time in Darwin, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
I will make sure to bring back some crocodile jerky for you, Tori. Don't worry.
My favourite. Thank you. So, Michael Koziol, you're joining me from Launceston, where it's a lot colder than it is where Shane is in Darwin.
It's quite chilly, but the sun's out, so we're happy.
You have been on the Scott Morrison campaign bus for almost exactly a week now. Where have you been in that time?
Look, Morrison's stuck largely to the East Coast. In fact, well, he has stuck to the East Coast and Tasmania. He started off by flying straight to Western Sydney and then spending a couple of days in marginal seats there, Lindsay and Reid. He then flew to Brisbane for one night. He then spent three nights in Melbourne and got around quite a few electorates around Melbourne and Geelong. And then he's hopped over to Tassie to end this week before heading back home to Sydney.
And what's your impression been of how he's travelling?
Look, I think everyone agrees he's running a pretty relaxed show at the moment. He's been doing a lot of activities and events. It hasn't been, you know, kind of slow pace on that front. But it's a relaxed campaign. He's, you know, seemed comfortable out on the hustings, meeting people. He has spent quite a bit of time actually just hanging out with the travelling media party, either at the pub or at a couple of other kind of lunchtime sessions. So he seems quite comfortable overall. He's, you know, been hammering his message on taxation, essentially, and that, you know, basically that Labor's going to increase taxes. It's a fairly small target campaign at this stage. And so he's been free to kind of, you know, hammer in that message no matter what his location. It's, you know, there have been lots of local announcements, but yeah, the message has been the same.
It's interesting that you say he's relaxed, because I was just talking to your colleague Shane Wright, who spent the last week with Bill Shorten, and he said the same thing about Bill Shorten. It's like we're dealing with two quite resilient, seasoned, energetic campaigners here.
You know, I think Morrison, this is obviously his first election as party leader. It's Shorten's second. But I think he's quite naturally comfortable out meeting people. He seems to have a fairly good rapport, and he's not carrying the burden of a sort of complicated large policy platform. It's pretty simple. It's tax cuts and the other mob are going to raise taxes. So he's just fairly comfortable hammering that home every day.
With the obvious caveat that I also gave Shane, that these campaigns are very tightly managed and access to normal voters is very tightly managed. What sort of reaction is he getting from people that you've seen when he, does come across voters in the wild?
Look, he did a street walk up in Redcliffe in Brisbane, which seemed to go fairly well. I mean, he had the benefit of having Luke Howarth next to him, the local member there, who seemed to know everyone by name. But, people were coming up to him. They were quite excited to take photos of him up there in Redcliffe, which is usually the case. I mean, most people, even if they might not be voting for you, still kind of pretty keen to see the Prime Minister rock up and get a selfie with them. So all of that was happening as you'd expect. But at the same time, he was at the pub last night and, there were a few people that were excited to see him, most people were kind of fairly happy just to keep carrying on with their night and sort of just look from a distance. And I guess that's the nature of politics at the moment. People are starting to pay attention at the beginning of this campaign, but people are also thinking about other things and they're not necessarily really transfixed by it, at least not at this stage.
What's your sense of the level of confidence? Because obviously he's starting as the underdog in this campaign and the polls say so, he's a new leader. But Bill Shorten, from where we're sitting back in HQ, looks like he's actually had a rough couple of days because, as you pointed out, he's got a very complicated portfolio of policies and Scott Morrison's just been hammering them the last few days. Is there a sense of buoyancy in that campaign or are they aware that they're still, got a long way to go?
Oh, look, I think they're realistic about it. I mean, it's interesting. They're not, they don't seem to be talking themselves up as the underdog all that much. Usually there's this kind of fight to be the biggest underdog. And there hasn't been a lot of underdog talk from Scott Morrison. Behind the scenes, people close to him are saying, well, hey, actually, we reckon we actually do have a shot down here in Tassie at a seat. Or things aren't as bad in Victoria as people might make it out to be. And, Queensland, it's not necessarily going to swing to Labor. So in a sense, they're kind of talking up their position in a lot of areas. But that is relative to, as you say, the pretty sort of disastrous or pessimistic expectations going into this campaign that, the government is going to get wiped out, which I think you'd have to say they're confident that that is not going to happen, but they're also realistic about the fact that they are most likely going to lose a few seats in Victoria and, they can't afford to because they're already starting without a majority. So, I think they are realistic about that and they know that they face an uphill battle in Victoria, in WA to a degree, and then, of course, again in Queensland.
So where are you standing right now?
We are standing at the Launceston Airport. We are...
The glamorous life of a journalist.
Well, it's at least it's handy for our flight back to Sydney, but we are actually the event, their campaign launch, is happening at the Royal Flying Doctors Service Hangar here at the airport. Which is interesting, and I think we're going to see probably some health-related announcements. We're right next to Ambulance Tasmania as well. So we'll see what they have in store in a few minutes when they all kicks off.
All right. Well, thanks for squeezing us in, Michael.
Not at all. Thanks, Tori.
Hi, I'm Jess Irvine. Thanks for listening to Please Explain. The Sydney Morning Herald and Age newsrooms are home to the country's most experienced economics editors and reporters, delivering trusted news and analysis. But we can't do it without you. Our subscribers get unlimited access to our award-winning independent journalism, plus exclusive behind-the-scenes stories you can't get anywhere else. Subscribe today and support news you can trust.
Joining us from Canberra, our chief political correspondent, David Crow. Welcome to you, David.
Hi, Tori.
And in her Please Explain podcast debut, our deputy federal editor, Stephanie Peatling. Welcome to the podcast, Steph.
Hello, Tori.
I can't believe that hasn't happened before this point.
What an oversight.
So we are 1 week into the federal election campaign. I'm going to start with you, David, your overall impressions on how the first campaign, the week, first week of the campaign is travelling.
Well, it went fairly smoothly for both sides up until the more recent days. But basically we've had, since Budget Day, a solid argument from the Coalition on tax cuts and an equally solid argument from Labor on health. They've kept to their strong suits, if you like, ever since the budget and the budget reply. Even the announcement of the budget didn't really change the game because they'd been talking about these two things before the announcement of the election, and then they just kept at it. And I think it highlights that we've got an election campaign that's in two phases. We've got the phase leading up to Easter and Anzac Day, and then we've got those final weeks where I think the political parties are calculating that voters will really start tuning in then after this holiday break that's coming up.
Steph, what's your thoughts on the first week?
I've been quite interested to notice how negative the Coalition has gone so early on. Picking up on David's point about how the themes and the issues that we're seeing in the campaign are pretty much what you'd come to expect from both parties, the Coalition on tax and the economy, Labor on health. Labor's been making a big effort, particularly in the early days, to be very positive, you know, what they're offering to people that's different in terms of the cancer research and so on, whereas the Coalition has gone very, very hard on its tax policy, but as an attack on Labor. And I've been quite interested to see how that has played out so starkly and strongly in the first few days. And I wonder how people are responding to that.
I thought Peter Hatcher had a good analogy the other day when he talked about it was a competition between someone with a hammer and someone with an Allen key, in that Scott Morrison had these one or two big things that he was going to just thump and thump and thump until they got through to people. But Bill Shorten has brought to this campaign an extraordinary suite of very complicated policies, hasn't he, David? And it's not that easy to explain what they mean for people.
No, and we're finding that difficulty with explaining complicated policy, because even though he wants to talk health every day, and he's designed the opening stage of the campaign with small announcements on health every day, he has to answer for the rest of the policy suite. And there's a lot there to talk about, whether it's negative gearing or the complexities of dividend imputation and how that affects people who own shares. And plus, of course, the whole issue of superannuation taxes, which we've seen come up more recently. And that's where it's been very difficult. I think Bill Shorten has shown in recent weeks that he really is match fit for this campaign. I saw him campaigning in Melbourne a couple of weeks ago and in Western Sydney, and he was very at ease with the voters he was talking to. He was on message with everything he had to talk about. But now we get a different dynamic where you never really know what you're going to be asked about, and you've got to be absolutely on top of every policy detail. And we've seen that superannuation was an area where he was not prepared, not ready, got caught out. And now that has, maybe derailed might be too big a word, I think, but it's caused troubles for the campaign, and it's a reminder that they're going to have to get it back on track.
How dangerous is it, Steph, for, you know, we've had famous examples before of politicians stumbling over policy or forgetting something, and it can really write them off. How big a problem is it for Bill Shorten when he says to the electorate, we are not bringing any new policies on taxing superannuation, and yet the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age on Wednesday, David wrote that, in fact, they're bringing four new policies to introduce further taxes onto superannuation.
It depends, I suppose, how many people are paying attention at this point in the campaign, but it's not a good look for them. You're right on that point. As Crowe says, Bill Shorten has been such a strong and disciplined campaign performer for several years now. He's led a team that's very united. They have had very, very few mishaps of the sort that we saw from him on Tuesday and also on Wednesday in relation to climate change. It's interesting to watch him now that he is in the forum that he has spent years training for, basically, after, you know, hundreds of town hall meetings. You know, he's so comfortable with people and so on, but he's now out on the road. He's got a very aggressive media pack with him. And yes, some of these things are, you know, driven by the media and so on, but they do produce stories that are counter to the Labor narrative. And those are what people are seeing. You know, if all you're seeing on the TV news that night is Bill Shorten failing to answer the question of a television reporter, then yes, yeah, and then you read in the paper the following morning that he has, you know, well, not lied, but stumbled on policy fronts, then your perception of him is not the one that he wants. He wants you to think that he is disciplined and focused and he leads a united team, and yet your take-home message from that is that he's stumbling, and that's a bad error to make this early in the campaign.
Can you just talk us through what happened with climate change policy?
The main issue that's coming up with climate policy is what's the economic impact of the Labor plan. Now, this is an area where they know they're going to get asked questions. They know they have to have an answer. They know that it's incredibly important. And the other thing they know that the government is going to come after them hard with economic modelling about the cost of their higher target to reduce emissions, 45% by 2030. Labor knows all of those things. And yet, we've seen in recent days that when they are asked what's the economic impact of your policy, they really struggle to have a clear answer. They don't have any dollar figure on it, and I think there are some reasonable arguments why that's hard to do. But they need to have a more compelling answer rather than try to brush away the questions. The questions are entirely legitimate questions, just like the questions about superannuation are entirely legitimate. These are their policies and they've got to explain them.
So at what point in the campaign do they actually have to release? They get the Parliamentary Budget Office to cost their policies, and at some point they have to tell us what those are. When does that happen, David?
I would expect it in the last week of the campaign. I wouldn't expect it any time before then. We usually see it in the last days because it's only in those final days that we know the full policy announcements from both sides. The budget update is out from Finance and Treasury. That gives us a bottom line, a baseline for the costings on either side. But they'll take their time off on that, I think, because we know from the whole argument about the $387 billion in higher revenue under Labor, according to that government modelling, we know from that that there's a lot of room for Labor to move on different policies. And I think they'll want to surprise us in the last couple of weeks.
Steph, what's your impression on how Prime Minister Scott Morrison is going so far in his first week? How's he going hammering his policy hammer?
I think he's hammering it very hard and very effectively. It's funny when you kind of actually get into the campaign cycle. I mean, you know, Scott Morrison comes into it at a bit of a disadvantage, obviously, because there's so much voter fatigue about the change in leadership with the Liberals. People are very disenchanted with that. They don't like when that happens. So he's had to overcome that kind of sense of immediate distrust that I suppose that people have there. But he's shown what a great campaigner he is. I mean, we know that he has vast experience as a party organiser and running campaigns himself. But this is the first federal election in which he has been is the main person, and that he's the one that's keeping them all together. And his message is tight, it's strong, it's disciplined, and I think it's going pretty well for him so far.
What's your impression on this campaign as it compares to others previously on the focus shift between policy and personality? I mean, these two leaders, neither of them are wildly beloved. Neither of them have sort of created a groundswell of voters who are donning T-shirts and following them down the street because of their personality. Does that mean that we're having a more policy-focused election campaign than before?
I think certainly so far we have. I mean, the differences are about policy. They're about what the Coalition and Labor are offering on tax, I think is probably foremost at the campaign forefront at this point in time. The government's done a really good job at making the debate about tax. That's its ground. And, you know, I think we should see this as a positive in a lot of ways. I mean, we've been talking for years about how we as journalists focus too much on personality and people. People often tell us, readers tell us they don't like that. They want to know more about policy. And here they are. They're in a campaign where, okay, neither of the leaders are probably, you know, the most charismatic person that we've seen at the head of one of their parties, but they're out there fighting on policy grounds.
Hey, the other thing, Tori, is don't you reckon charisma is now overrated? Because, you know, all this focus on the personalities of the leaders, and we just see them cut down midterm after the election anyway. And it's kind of refreshing to think that it doesn't really matter that much what the personalities of the leaders are when you think about it. We've seen so much turmoil in federal politics over the last decade or so. I can't help wondering whether voters just think, look, I don't want to know about your personality. Just tell me about your policy and I'll make up my mind.
And in fact, maybe if you're more boring, then you'll be more trustworthy.
And maybe we need a resilience scale. Like, we just need leaders who may not be charismatic or that appealing, but are not going to collapse in a heap.
There's a lot of attention on the fact that net approval for Bill Shorten is lower than for Scott Morrison. I'm not sure that is as big a factor as some people make out. I think that, you know, your preferred prime minister, there's always an advantage for the incumbent. I think that Labor has actually done quite well for quite a long time now in the polls, even though Bill Shorten doesn't have that sort of popularity that Kevin Rudd had in 2007. I am wondering whether that really is as big a factor as some of the commentary makes out. He's got an appeal on policy that I think is hitting some of the target voters really effectively. Young voters, for instance, on negative gearing. Some of the older voters aren't happy with where he is on dividend imputation, but I think Labor knows exactly who it's targeting to get votes this time.
It's an interesting thing, the personality question and how much it's needed or not, because, you know, one of the other things that we like to hand-wring and twist and turn about is the lack of the vision thing, as Paul Keating once called it. You know, the fact that we seem not to have politics that's about really big scale, broad, far-reaching ideas. And we talk about, are voters uninspired? Is that why they don't turn in? Is it because we don't have these really big, fascinating, interesting ideas, which probably to some degree or another, you know, attract big personalities that go with them? It's an interesting point that we're in politics. You know, it's a very, a lot of people are disenchanted. They're turned off by it. So I think what we're in is a pretty crucial campaign, actually, in terms of how we go forward with that trend.
So as much as, of course, we're very serious here and like to keep it all on policy, there's always a bit of campaign fun as well. Any campaign candidate shockers in the first week, Steph?
Well, it's pretty hard to go past Zali Steggall in Warringah, the independent who's taking on former Prime Minister Tony Abbott. It's a big fight for her, obviously. There's a lot of concern on the ground about how Mr. Abbott will go. And they say all's fair in love and politics, obviously. And Zali has had both of those come together when her former husband and his now wife went to a Sydney newspaper earlier in the week to talk about some tweets that she had issued and how they distanced themselves from them and used quite strong language actually to criticise her and so on. And I think a lot of people would have flinched when they read that story, because the personal, you know, your personal life being dragged into things is innately grotty, let's call it that. But hey, that's politics. And I've got to say, that story is the story that is all anyone is coming up to me and talking about.
I imagine any politicians, including her opponents, would have steered well clear of getting involved in a spat between her and her ex-husband and his new wife.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, you can just imagine Tony Abbott just kind of keeping his mouth shut, knowing that anything he said is not going to help, just keep his head down. It's all good
for
him.
That's not like him,
though. But it's all good for him not to be involved in that in any way, shape or form.
It is. So finally, David, we're approaching the Easter long weekend and also Anzac Day. Is this campaign going to go into a hibernation during that period?
I think we are going to see a bit of a hibernation. We are hearing rumours that the coalition's going to get out there with an attack on Labor over carbon pricing and carbon reductions. It's going to be tough if they do that after Easter, because we've still got that extended holiday. Logic says that we're going to see a bit of a siesta in the campaign, continuing to focus on each side's strengths with small announceables. And then things will ramp up in those final weeks.
Okay. Well, we're all looking forward to Easter, I think, not least the voting public. Steph, David, thanks so much for joining Please Explain this week.
Thanks, Tori.
Thanks, Tori.
Thanks to our guests this week, David Crow and Stephanie Peatning in Canberra, Michael Koziol in Tasmania, and Shane Wright in the Northern Territory. If you're a Please Explain fan, we'd love for you to tell others about the podcast and leave a review on iTunes. It's one of the best ways for new listeners to find us online. And of course, you can get in touch with the team. Find the Please Explain email address in our show notes. Please Explain is brought to you by the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. The best way to support the work we do is by taking out a subscription. Just search Subscribe Sydney Morning Herald or The Age to get yourself started and unlock a heap of subscriber benefits like unlimited web access on multiple devices, weekend paper deliveries, and special events and discounts. This episode was produced and edited by David Escort and Rachel Dexter. Field recording by Debbie Harrington. Technical assistance from Yuji Shimada. Special thanks as always to Amelia Maguire, who does all of our production logistics, and to Tom McKendrick, our head of audio. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.
Seriously, this was the quote on the headline. Vote Shorten and Bowen for the end of the world. I know in politics that yes, you're not supposed to go around ruling things in or ruling things out.